Blog Talk Welcome. Radio.
Welcome to Face Us, the radio show where we listen to your voice and talk about the corruption we all face every day in our courts. America's courts have been co-opted by organized crime organizations operating under the color of law to defraud their victims of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We the people must confront the perpetrators of these crimes to have any hope of creating transparency and accountability in our courts and repairing our legal system. We stand with you to create this accountability. It's time to face us. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Face Us Radio, Block Talk Radio, Hidden Truth Revealed, and this is the Inside Scoop. Today is December 6, 2023, getting close to Christmas time, everyone. My name is Luann Fleming. I am with my other co-host tonight. Her name is Hillary Hoag. Marcy Freeman does have the night off. Say hello to everyone, Hillary.
Good evening, everyone. Of course, another great show, the radio show that really unveils the truth about what is going on in the court systems throughout this country. We have lived it. We have seen it. We are fighting it. And we are proud to help people going through what is more than likely the worst situation in their life. It is corrupt, and we are here, and we will not stop until we get justice for every American citizen. So thank you for having me again, Luann.
Absolutely. Yeah, like you were saying, it's corrupt, and I've had nonstop problems with people calling. You know, they call up, and or they text me, email me saying that their loved one's in guardianship. They don't even know what guardianship is. And so they somehow found our phone numbers, our addresses, our emails. I've asked in several places, and they didn't even know what a guardianship is. So it's a really good thing. Hopefully some of them will be listening tonight. I gave them the number and the phone numbers to call into our show. Every single week, if you want to call in, leave a message, or talk to one of the hosts, that number is 845-241-9962. You press a 1. 845-241-9962. You press a 1, and that'll let me know that you have your hands raised. We also want to let everybody know that our show's been getting really busy lately. We've had a full list of folks listening, which is wonderful. So if you want to call into the show, make sure you do it soon enough. So when I do start calling you in, you will be on the first to call in. And that number is 845-241-9962. You press a 1. But we are live here at Faces Radio, and we have a really good guest. Again, we're bringing her back. It was an incredible show last week, so we want everybody to tune in. And we also have like 350 other shows or something like that that we've been doing over the last 7 years, bringing out the corruption in the probate courts, family courts, CPS, divorce courts. And our motto is stay the heck out of them if you can. I mean, try to work with your family members. Try to do whatever you can. And when you hire an attorney, make sure they're working for you and just have precautions. Anyway, Hillary, did you have anything you want to talk about before we bring Debbie Carroll back in?
Just that, the fight continues. We're nearing the end of another year. My dad was supposed to be adjudicated and made a ward of the state in April of 2017, and I managed no magic potion to get him out of guardianship. There was a settlement agreement, bogus, but again, at the time, my father and I would have cut our arms and legs off to keep him out of guardianship. I could have gone back to a normal semblance of life, whatever that is, but what I have seen in the probate courts and family courts in this country is beyond barbaric and criminal. So I have an obligation to keep fighting. And when we can honestly say, with the help of other advocates, Robin Austin, Rick Black, Ray Contreras, Ali Carino, Marcy Friedman, plus, that we are making a difference. We are getting media involved, and we are helping the average American who doesn't have $1 million, but has money that these attorneys and guardians want every single case. And I am proud to be here as part of the advocacy world in guardianship reform.
Yeah, and you know, and you don't think that you're going to end up in a situation like this. You know, I never thought in my lifetime that someone could just come in as a stranger from a court, take away your whole livelihood from your whole family all the way down through all the generations, strip you of everything that was yours, and then have the okay for the courts to do that to you. I mean, to me, it is depressing. It's devastating. It's breaking up the family bond. You know, my family still isn't cordial. You know, we're still having issues with all this stuff, and it's just really irritating to me that it's Christmas time and we're still having issues. You know, and it's been over 10 years in my family that we've had to deal with these probate courts. Now, I know that our next guest we have is Debbie Carroll, and we've had her on. Actually, she was one of our co-hosts with us. She had her own radio show called The Fourth Branch back probably 3 or 4 years ago, and she was one of our co-hosts, and she was taking the handle on the CPS, and it was about children's rights and for families and children. And I tell you what, she did a fantastic job. So we're happy to have her back. We had a show last week, which was really a powerful show. I had so many people ask me if we could bring her back. They were ready to listen in. So we're going to welcome Debbie Carroll back. Let's talk a little bit about what we're going to talk about tonight. We're going to bring her in. We welcome back Debbie Carroll. She's from Colorado, a good friend of mine. She's an advocate for families and children's rights. Well, this is part two, everybody. So let's dive deeper into last week's discussion. There's an amazing number of commonalities between the two systems, Adult Protective Services, APS, and Child Protective Services. Investigators have incredible power to remove the elderly, children, disabled adults, or whom they want. All they must prove is a probable cause. Once APS and CPS get involved, families are left wondering if they will ever see them again. Probate and family courts wield incredible broad powers. They can impose restraining orders and authorize no visitation. Debbie was a radio show, like I said, a radio show host on Hidden Truth Revealed, The Fourth Branch. She was on our radio show. Yeah, she was. And so we are going to welcome her back. Debbie Carroll, say hello to everybody and welcome back.
Hi, Debbie.
Hi. I'm in Little.
Hold on.
Colorado.
Go ahead. Speak up, Debbie.
Can you hear me okay?
No, it's not on.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you now.
Okay. I have you on speakerphone, and I was trying to talk without having it up against my ear. So let me know if you lose me at all. First of all, I want to just acknowledge that we're friends because of the activism. We met over a decade ago, and we were so excited about starting nonprofits and starting organizations. And I had been doing my podcast for about a year when Luann figured out how easy it is and how important it is. It's not that hard to run a podcast. It's pretty straightforward. Sometimes there are glitches. But what I want to comment about what both you and Hillary said is that I think there's two Americas. There's the victims of the government, and there's the people who don't want to look at it or give it a thought or are participating in it. So, I mean, when you go down in my where I live, you know, you go to restaurants, they're crowded, the prices are outrageous, people are drinking and partying and laughing and having a great time, and they are oblivious to this tide, this tidal wave, it's a tsunami of government overreach, government interference, and private businesses profiting. from the NGOs, the non-governmental organizations, all of these mutant organizations that have their hands in profiting off of the lower class of people, financially lower, educationally lower, in some cases physically lower. A lot of the people who are going through the court cases are disabled in some way. And in our government acts like we're helping the disabled people, but we are not helping them. The courts are not helping them. They are, by and large, profiting from the assets of handicapped people, which are their disability funds, the assets of people when they get elderly, which is their entire estate, the assets of people going through a divorce where they can lose everything, including their children's education funds. They can lose, you know, they become debilitated. They become completely destituted of their fighting the courts. This is not what our government was supposed to be doing. This was never the intention of the founders to allow the government to become so powerful and so pervasive that families cannot survive trials and they cannot survive interactions with the court intact. That was so the whole focus, the entire focus has been perverted. It's been corrupted. And it looks to me like when you're talking about the family bonds, that breaking up the family allows the state to step in. And we become tools of the state, slaves of the state. And it's a move towards, I mean, I tell my mom, it's a move towards communism, and she doesn't believe me. She just can't wrap her mind around the life that she lived and how much freedom. So the people after World War II, the generation that has come out since World War II, the baby boomer generation, they enjoyed the last of the progress and of the freedom that we experienced throughout the course of the United States of America being formed without having a monarch and having the people run the government, but they fell asleep at the wheel. They were so busy having a wonderful life, working hard, but getting fairness in the courts, getting justice when crimes were committed. It's all of this is being undermined right now by complete chaos. There's chaos on the streets. There's chaos in the courts. There's chaos in families. Everywhere you turn, people are no longer able to have reasonable conversations with their family members. They scream at each other in the streets, whether they're wearing masks or not wearing masks. It's just become, it's become very crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So I see.
I absolutely agree with you. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I see the court as the foundation for not doing the jobs that they're supposed to do, and for perverting justice, for perverting intuition. It's counterintuitive. So here's an example. People hear about horrible family court cases where the children stop talking to one parent. Hillary, have you ever heard of that?
Of course I have. That was the case with my sister, that she really was in contact with my father, and then she got the vibe that she was left out of the will, and then she made the move.
Uh-huh. And sometimes these people are, in fact, perpetrators, but a lot of times what's happened is the court is triangulating the family. So the court sits there and they polarize the family. Instead of bringing a family together to an amicable solution, the courts allow the lawyers in a family court matter to attack the other parent, the other side, and they attack them ruthlessly and they attack them through the children. There's no holds barred. They can say anything they want. They can accuse them. They can call them crazy. They can call them drug addicts, alcoholics. They can call them anything they want. And the court just brings it all in and just keeps rolling through how to protract this case and get as much of the family's assets as possible. And nobody cares about the effect on the children.
Exactly.
And they're also teaching, they're modeling alienation. They're modeling kicking somebody out of your life rather than trying to solve the problem. And that has flowed over into therapy. It has flowed over into, I just know from personal experience that after my kids went to college and they were woke, they were awakened to how life could be if people could just do whatever they want. And what they care about is music and drugs and sex and parties, and everything is just lovely. And they, you know, they work, but they spend their money on nothing but pleasure, and they don't want children. So these are like patterns that are absolutely underlying. Like, my kids don't want kids because of my activism, and they're afraid of the family court. They're afraid of having children and having their children ripped away from them. So I've been really thinking about this on multiple levels. And, you know, when I come down and say it's the judges, are compromised. The judges think that they are an enlightened, all-powerful class, and they have allowed some of that. So part of what I want to talk about with the foster care system, it's not just the foster care system. We're talking about all of these administrative courts, and by administrative courts, I mean the probate and the juvenile, and under the probate is the family court. And people don't necessarily, they think of court, if you have never been in court, never had a lawsuit, you think of court as this magnificent place where justice is found and truth is exposed, and you don't know that there are different kinds of courts, and you don't realize that in the court. So the thing I want to tie this into is with Luann talking about all they need is probable cause. They don't even need probable cause, Luann. All they need is an accusation. All they need is an accusation. All they need is a reason to investigate. And so, as you all know, Robin and Luann are writing a book about the probate court. And they asked me to submit some information about the Child Protective Services arm of the Department of Human Services. And last week, what we covered was that the Department of Human Services, as it relates to children, has several branches, and they operate with the money from the Social Security Act. And I don't know if that's where all their funding comes from, but I know when it comes to Title IV, 4B is the family reunification, Title IV-D is child support, and Title IV-E is foster care and elderly nursing care. So in Title IV-E, they're getting both the children and the elderly. They also service the disabled through another title, and that's also funded by Social Security. So what has happened that we see is we see the results of our government partnering with private companies and non-governmental organizations and nonprofits and all kinds of entities whose goal is to profit. Our government is stealing the assets through what happens in the courts and paying attorneys and paying fees and locking people up. All of this has created a government that is using its people as units. We are commodities. We've lost the humanity in the courts. We're nothing but a case number with a certain dollar figure associated for how much has been spent of federal funds to the state and of federal funds to the courts, of state funds distributing those federal funds, of money just exchanging hands. And what has happened is our courts have become the backbone of our domestic economy. They have privatized themselves. It is we are facing a monolith so huge and so extensive, so pervasive, and so shape-shifting. Like, these nonprofits, like, they are, like, there to help people, but their boards of directors can be getting money for services that are supposed to be governmental services. So when Tennyson House is coming into a home to help take care of a baby and to diagnose a baby in a child protective services case. So we have Tennyson House is like supposed to be this great nonprofit. They're getting all kinds of federal funding for victims of women, you know, the VAWA. They're getting fatherhood, parenting funding.
Uh-huh.
They're holding these supervised visitation visits that they get funded for, and the parents pay. So if the parents can't afford to pay, the state's paying Tennyson House. And then they hire Tennyson House to go into the homes and do physical therapy or read to the little children, and then to have public nurse come in and diagnose the children with disabilities. It's beyond staggering. And people only have they only interface with one little piece of it, and they never put it together. They never understand how the funding works. It's overwhelming to understand how the funding works. The only people who know how it works are the people that are profiting from it.
Wow.
That's what's happened. So
we had talked about
several things. I just want to quickly just kind of go through my paper that I wrote that we were using as a guide last week. And I want to enhance parts of it. It starts off, the American government has been weaponized against America's families and children through state and county government and court systems. Federal lawmakers are ultimately responsible for overseeing the foster care system and its funding. So we were focusing mostly on that. And I talked about the Department of Human Services, where we're talking about how much money the states get from the federal government for every child they take into foster care. So I pulled out my trusty old book, Daniel L. Hatcher's The Poverty Industry, The Exploitation of America's Most Vulnerable Citizens. He published this book in 2016, and it is the most scathing exposure of the crimes our states are committing against helpless and unknowing families and children, and they're getting away with it. It's not even been brought into a lawsuit. Nobody has wrapped their mind around how to bring a lawsuit so the OIG, the Office of the Inspector General, can bring lawsuits for Medicaid fraud, and they can bring lawsuits for Title IV-E misappropriation. But even when those are brought by various groups, they don't get anywhere. So they haven't changed the laws. In fact, they're making the laws more complex and more open to interpretation by the judges. So one of the things we talked about last week was who is a parent in a foster care case. And it's not just parents, but mostly it's a war against poor parents. And what I was going to say is that we came up with a figure of $192,000 a month. That's $16,000 a month that Title IV-E funds for children in foster care each per month. and that a family of four was therefore receiving 16 times 4, which would be $64,000 a month, which comes out to just under $1 million a year for one family of four children to be taken into the foster system, where they may or may not get new clothes, they may or not get haircuts, they may or not or may not get shoes and proper food, but they certainly do get lawyers. And they give lawyers to each of the children or to all four of the children, and they give lawyers to the parents, and they can give one lawyer to the mother and one to the father for the purpose of foster care. And so the money, the $192,000 per child, about 6% of that goes to the foster parents. And the other 94% of that goes to adjudicate the family and to take as long as they can legally. Used to be 15 months to adjudicate a baby in foster care. And because of COVID, they've expanded that to 2 years, and the judge has the discretion to make it longer. So that law has become completely moot. It doesn't even apply. But what I wanted to talk about was what I learned, because after we talked on the phone, one of the things people in my position need to do, in your position too, Luann, and Hillary probably, you know, you need to read the laws as soon as they change, because you can't even possibly, nobody that in the world that I know of, unless it's all they ever do is read the laws and the changes, can keep track of it. And so what I did is I printed out Title 19 of the Children's Code on what a parent is in order to adjudicate a foster care case. And I have found out that because of reproductive technology and because of changes in the way families are made with adoption and with the foster adopt program and with making sure that homosexual couples have a chance to adopt a baby, so the law has changed about what a parent is. And there, since the 1960s, there's been a law called the Psychological Parent Law. Well, the courts don't like that law anymore because it has requirements. It requires that the psychological parent law requires that the person has lived with the child. It used to be 9 months. They've dropped that to 182 days, which is 6 months, but they hardly ever use it anymore. It used to be used for anybody who lived with the child. It could be an aunt or an uncle. It could be, you know, a family friend. It could be a renter who lives in the basement and sometimes babysits the child. It could be a neighbor who thinks the child's not being treated fairly by the parent. And so the neighbor befriends the child and isn't quite living there, but the child spends a lot of time in the neighbor's home. And what has happened is they are not using psychological parent. I did a podcast about psychological parent in 2015 and in 2016 following a specific case, the Danielson case, out of Breckenridge, Colorado. And they aren't using that one anymore. They're calling anybody who lives with the child, or I'm going to read one of the descriptions to you. They're calling them natural parents or legal parents. And this is an example of how loose the definition of a parent is. And what I am reading is from Colorado Revised Statute 19.1.105, Part 3D. And it's in my paper, but this is one definition of a parent that has been changed to make it easier for a parent to be designated by the court as a person to be designated as a parent, and this is what it says. While the child is under the age of majority, The person receives the child into the person's home and openly holds out the child as the person's natural child. Do you want me to repeat it?
Yeah, go ahead. Do repeat it again.
This is under, a person is presumed to be the natural parent of a child if, part 3D, while the child is under the age of majority, the person receives the child into the person's home and openly holds out the child as the person's natural child. It's kind of like common law marriage, only it sounds like I would call it common law taking over of a child, taking custody of a child. There's no requirement, nothing. There's nothing that says that there's a psychological bond. There's nothing that says that the child wants to be with that person. There's nothing that says that that child's, the home is a safe home. And there's nothing that says that the home that receives the child. This is what's going on with children coming into our country right now. They're putting children into homes. And they can call that person now. They said that the person who owns the home can hold out the child as their natural child. There's no requirements whatsoever. Zero requirements. It's completely up to the judge. And I also want to note that the law, this law in Colorado was adapted in 2020, but this is the way they describe the old-fashioned way of what a parent was. I want to see if you notice something in it that is disturbing. This is 1A, okay? The person and the parent who gave birth to the child are or have been married to each other or are in a civil union pursuant to Article 15 of Title 14, and the child is born during the marriage or civil union within 300 days after the marriage or civil union is terminated by death, annulment, declaration of invalidity of marriage or civil union, dissolution of marriage or civil union or divorce, or after a decree of legal separation is entered by the court. There's two things that have changed from that definition from the last 100 years. You know what they are?
What?
How do they describe the word mother?
And they're baffled by all of it.
They took the word mother out of the law. It's the person who gave birth to the child.
They don't even put the word mother in there anymore.
The word mother's been taken out of Colorado law.
Wow.
Regarding foster care. Removing the child from that mother who gave birth to the child. And the other is the addition of the civil union. That's the other thing. Those are the two things that have changed in the law. The other thing
well,
I want
to
point
get rid
out.
Of, mm-hmm. Are they just trying to get rid of the family union or what?
They're trying to get rid of, well, have any of you ever read the book Brave New World?
Mm-mm.
Okay, I reread that book. It was written in 1933 by Aldous Huxley. Aldous Huxley hung out with George Orwell and so also with C.S. Lewis. These men had a group, and they were all very concerned about the way the world was going, and they were warning us. But Brave New World, there are no mothers and fathers. The children are created in laboratories, and the children that are going to be the working class, their culture that their embryos grow up in is alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have mothers and fathers. They have broken the bond, and our law is moving towards that. And
yeah,
I haven't
isn't
even
it, you know, and I
Go
think
ahead.
About that, Debbie, you're right, because you know, when you're going into a probate court or family court, divorce court, and I've heard it from every single court so far, that when you go into a court, they really don't care about your family. And so the family starts arguments, and they like that. I think the courts love that, in fact, because they profit from the arguments of the family. But they also break the bonds of that family by not going through mediation. We are supposed to go through mediation as one of the worst things I've ever experienced. You know, and to this day, my family still has arguments over about the whole thing that happened, what these strangers did to our family. That's the same thing that's happening with the Child Protective Services, the same thing going on with all of that, the children, the parents. It's the same exact pattern.
I have another story I'm going to bring in later, but I want to make it even more chilling. I want you to know about how this law came about. So this law about what a parent is 5 pages long definition, because it goes on and on and on. It goes into genetic testing, who pays child support. So one of the reasons they want to get as many natural parents into the foster care case, okay, there's several reasons. Hang on a second.
Money. Right.
Yeah, well,
it's profitable.
Okay. Well, so they also get a document from anybody who becomes a party to the case that if they lose, they're responsible for child support for the course of the time that the case is lasting. So they walk out, just like in a family court case, may or may not have one party paying the other party, but at the end of the case, whatever they decide the amount should be after they go through the court process and the submittal of all of the child support documentation. So when you first get separated, the judge may say that, you know, the husband needs to pay the mother who's got the kids until the custody is determined, the father has to pay. Well, if the court finds that it's the father who's going to get custody, the mother now owes the child support for all of that time since the case began. So, I mean, that's just one. But they're bringing in people that – so that's one thing. But what I want to do, it's going to blow your mind, okay?
Yeah, come blow my mind. Yeah.
Okay. Is the most chilling aspect of the whole thing. So Daniel Hatcher's book is about these revenue maximization companies. And this includes Maximus. It includes TCG. It includes Deloitte. And these companies pay lobbyists to maximize revenue out of the Social Security fund. They literally write the laws. And there's a group called ALEC, and it's American Legislative something something, and I should have looked it up. I was too busy making dinner for my kid, who's not feeling well at all. It's the Legislative Council. And what they're doing nowadays, it was probably always this way, but you have to send it in the mail. You know, George Washington and James Madison, they might have been sending templates of laws to other states if states wanted to know how to write laws. But it's all computerized, mechanized, and instant right now. They're literally doing templates. So there's some high-powered lawyers writing up laws, and they just adopt them. They might make a few little changes, but these legislators aren't the brightest. So they just, like, they'll be happy to get you know, Virginia's law on the definition of a parent and adapt it for Colorado with a few changes here and there. And so ALEC does that, the Legislative Council. But our government is paying private companies to write laws that allow them, the private companies, to get a piece of the children's foster care money, and they are also identifying more and more children with disabilities, and they are literally maximizing. I want to read a quote to you right out of Daniel's book about, let's see here. It's not very long. They're using predictive analytics to figure out which children. So what I wanted to say earlier that I didn't mention, of the 192,000, that's only for the poorest of the poor. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I know two cases right now where the families have money. And so I don't know if they're receiving the full 192,000, if the state's receiving the full 192,000, or if some of the costs that the parents and grandparents are bearing because they have money, if it defrays or reduces the payment that the federal government pays to the state. But it takes $192,000 a year to adjudicate a child. And what they're trying to do is SSI, which is disability, and SSDI, which is survivor benefits, are federal funds that can be used by the Department of Human Services to offset the cost of care and maintenance of foster children. DFCS, mm-hmm. the Department of Foster Care, can leverage over 8,000 in federal funds for every eligible child that is enrolled onto SSI benefits. That's disability. DFCS can expect to enroll over 1,200 foster children onto SSSI benefits and over 700 children onto SSDI benefits upon the implementation of a comprehensive advocacy program. This should result in over $13 million to Florida in annual federal benefits additionally. But what they say here is where I want to find the one that says that they are literally targeting the children. They we believe that this unique set of circumstances will yield a larger SSI eligible population. They are, gosh, I'm trying to find the one that says, oh, all likely foster care candidates are scored in triage cation. Presently, few mm-hmm. county resources remain to support, let's see. Now they're trying to extend into juvenile Social Security benefits by going into the juvenile detention centers and getting those kids all set up, because if they're placed in foster care, they'll be able to get the money. The county would still, let's see, it says, in the case of Guilford County alone, even if district court judges only prohibited the Guilford County Department of Social Services from using a fourth of the juvenile's SSS benefits to pay for the cost of their care, Guilford County would still have to find an additional $100,000 in its budget to feed and house these juveniles. They're basically going into it's called mining foster children for revenue. Daniel Hatcher
right.
has it. They're literally mining them so that they can get these laws changed, so they can get more and more children all the time, and get more and more and make them disabled. Or, like, make them disabled by moving them from foster care to foster care, or placing them with a person who's not the biological parent and does not have good interests in mind for the child, and traumatize the child so that they can't sleep at night. They get diagnosed as having a disability. So the state now has more reason why that child belongs in foster care for as long as possible. I find that businesses, we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars of our Social Security money going to revenue maximization companies that do governmental functions. They collect child support. They serve warrants for restraining orders. They do all of these businesses that are associated with running a foster care industry, and we're
That's
paying
crazy.
For them out of our taxpayer money. It's so huge. I have heard, I can't remember where I heard it, but it's too big to take apart. It's too big to let it stop. There's too many people
right.
counting on their jobs And these little people
exactly.
working in the tennis. Yep. The little tennis
yep,
and house
problem.
People.
It's a
yep.
lucrative business. It's kind of like the same issues with the guns and ammunition and all that. You know, no one can do gun control. You know, these families, you know, they go up and they kill these families and they're trying to take guns off the streets, but they're profitable. Same thing. You know, they're
right.
profitable companies. The same thing.
By the way,
and the same thing with probate courts. Same thing. Mm-hmm.
By the way, two of the maximization companies that he mentioned are Grumman and Lockheed Martin. Lockheed
mm-hmm.
Martin is in the business of collecting child support. I don't know. Are they bringing their ballistic missiles? To the dad or the mom that owes the child support? What are they doing?
Yeah.
What are they doing in the business? That is the business of the court. And the court
mm-hmm.
has farmed out all of the collection stuff, all of it. And so let me just put this out there. Who do you
mm-hmm.
think owns the collection agencies? Who do you think owns
exactly.
them?
Well, who you know, this majority of the 1 or 2% of the richest people, I do believe
the
that
judges.
The
it's
courts
the judges
are involved in that 1 or 2%. I'm just saying, you know.
Yep.
They own America. They do. And it's
they
that.
Own.
Because like you were talking about earlier, Debbie, you said that we didn't do anything for years. It just kept getting stronger and stronger against us. We didn't stop it in time.
Well, we didn't know it, and so we're not to be blamed. We didn't know. It's all done in secrecy. Daniel Hatcher says that over and over. It's all done in secrecy. The confidentiality laws are to protect criminals. The confidentiality
mm-hmm.
laws. So let me just tell you what I told. I was talking to a therapist because of the alienation that I'm being exposed to in my family. And I told him, I want to just let you know who I am. I want you to know why I'm being alienated. And I said, so you're a therapist. You did not know that kids are going to college and being told that their parents don't matter. And that their parents are outdated and they're stupid. They're obsolete. They don't understand. They don't understand why transgenderism is a really good thing for some people. And they don't understand why, mushrooms should be legalized. And they don't whatever, more just balls to the walls parents are, you know, like we just don't want our kids doing drugs. We don't want our kids changing their gender. We don't want our kids, getting in with bad people, whatever. And so I said to the therapist, so just let me talk. I know I'm paying for 50 minutes, and I'll let you. Is it okay with you if I tell you what I do? And he goes, right.
Sure.
Yeah. Sure, go ahead. And I just told him, I want you to know that it is the courts that are causing you to have so many troubles people coming into the doors of your business. You have kids who have had parents taken away from them for the last 40 or 50 years. Since the 1970s, mothers have been being excluded from their children's lives if the father has more money and wants to take them to court and wants to rape the children. Because we already talked about the memorandum of procedures that gives children back to a parent with a history of sexual abuse against the child as long. So this is a foster care document that gives children
mm-hmm.
back to a parent who is sexually assaulting the child as long as the parent is not in denial. And you remember what that means, right? You know what that means, Luann. If the parent's not in denial, they get the kid back. So why do they get the kid back? Because they admitted it. So you're getting these kids coming in. And I happened to be in a therapist's office, and I read a counseling magazine article, and it says that the rate of kids reporting incest and sexual assault inside their families has become so high that it's a crisis. But
right.
the therapists are not allowed to talk about it because they will lose their jobs for breaking confidentiality. Now, if they talk
yeah.
about it anonymously, I don't think that they should lose their jobs for breaking confidentiality, but the universities won't let them. Mm-hmm. I ran into a counselor on the metro, and I was telling her, you know, I know about all these kids that are suffering. She said, "You're right, but we can't talk about it because we will lose our jobs." And so the therapist I'm talking to goes, "You know, I didn't know it was such an obvious pattern. We really don't talk about it in our profession. But it is, you're absolutely right. These kids are coming in and they're traumatized. They hate one parent. And you ask them why and they can't even tell you anything the parent did to them." It's
That's
been
crazy,
going around.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've been infiltrated from within.
Mm-hmm.
So, is there any hope? Does anybody out there have any hope?
That's a good question. I mean, what do you think?
What do I think?
Right.
Well, so I've tried everything I know, and my answer to that is everything we can do, we need to do. We need to keep trying. We need to keep exposing. We need to keep pointing the finger at these judges that are doing this. So, I mean, and it's gotten everywhere. Judges are working with local attorneys. So I have a friend who's got a property up in Nebraska, and he's got a tenant in there who's just refusing to pay and demanding that, you know, that she doesn't have to pay. And so the local lawyer is working with the judge. His lawyer and the judge are like, they don't care whether he wins or not. They would just assume
get the house taken away from him. It's like, and
right.
He's like beside himself. Like, what do I do? But it's lawless.
Well, you know, like we came up with that topic last week, and we were asking everybody if they thought the courts needed to be abolished. You know, that the CPS and the APS they're out of control, and that the probate courts usually work with the APS and the CPS people, and they believe them over the families. So there's really no way.
Absolutely, the agencies absolutely need to be abolished. Law enforcement needs to be investigating crimes. If there are not crimes being committed, then the courts do not. They should not be able to. I think these restraining orders that are granted, I've sat in some courtrooms where there have been good judges that don't put out the restraining orders, but I think there's some that are just rubber stamped. They allow one party to come in and be hysterical, and they give that party more credibility, and the other party doesn't even know how to fight it, doesn't have an attorney, doesn't know how to fight it. She said, "Well, that's not true. She's not telling the truth, Your Honor. That's not good enough. That's not a defense." They remove the whole restraining order policy is shocking to a conscience of anyone who knows what the Constitution means. Probable cause is what needs to be determined, and they're not. They don't even do an investigation to find out who's lying.
Right,
that's
exactly.
Where,
and if they have a mediation, it's a mock mediation like they did with my family. You know, when we had mediation, we went into an office of the people that were against us, and retired judge was there, and he held up cue cards saying, "Step down, you're going to lose." We never, ever got a mediation. It was so unprofessional. So even that needs to be abolished because it didn't work. You know, I don't know how many other people have had that mediation and it didn't work, or they went into a court and their judge ruled completely against them. If it wasn't for the judges rubber stamping this, it wouldn't be happening. So you're right, Debbie. You're absolutely right. It has to be, the judges have to be the ones to say, "Well, what's going on in this case?" And they're not. They're going along with the PS and the CPS people. And
I had said we need citizen review.
You know what I mean?
We need citizen review. We need people with you know, the prudent person. The person who is a reasonable man, you know, we need people who can look at stuff and see through. Like, you can sit in some of these hearings you hear on YouTube or court cases. Like, where in the world, why is that judge helping that lawyer? Judges are not supposed to tell lawyers what to say or how to say it or how to say it better. Like, like, perhaps if you said it with more, you know, if perhaps if you said it with, that means stop, reframe your question so that I can rule on it, so that I can rule the way you want me to rule, but you just need to say it better. Like, overrule. You don't know how to ask the damn question. You don't know how to say that, you know, you don't get help. The judge is not supposed to help the attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. No, you know, if the attorney don't know, how, the attorneys don't know, my in my federal lawsuit, so I was knocked to the ground by a woman. And when I called 911, the cop knocked me to the ground for talking about the foster care and talking about what Daniel Hatcher calls the iron triangle of poverty, where you have the state, the federal government, the state, you got the private entities. And the private entities are Wells Fargo Bank. We talked about that last week, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the banks know what's going on. The banks are getting the money from Social Security. I mean, Wells Fargo, we have the head of the Social Security Administration calling Wells Fargo her bank, and we have the head of Jefferson County DHS, Lynn Johnson, calling the judges her judges.
So the only thing we can really do as advocates, though, Debbie, is that we need to just get the word out to people that this is what they're facing. That's in any kind of court they get into. You know, say they're going to go to divorce court. That's another big loophole there because all the assets are put right out in front of the court. So the best thing to do is to talk to everybody and say, hey, if you're going to get a divorce, do it amicably. I mean, do it, you know, where you both separate, or even still, don't even get a divorce. Just separate or do whatever you got to do to see what happens. Is that
well, you
what
know
you
that,
tell people? You know,
well,
is that,
you know that
what you're suggest?
Stacey,
go ahead.
Stacey Slayton and I own a company called Divorce Planners. And all she does is fill in the child and offer mediation while filling out the child support. So she has a couple come in and they have to sit there and go through the answers to the child support questions together. And she tries to tell them that, you know, if you think the grass is greener on the other side, now one or both of you is going to be supporting two households. Like, do you really get what you're doing here? And I actually have a funny story of it's funny because it has a good ending where the father was so taken in by the family court lawyer and he was doing everything to undermine the mom. And then I don't know how somebody got through. There was a lot of prayer involved. I know that. And he just decided that he made a mistake and he was, you know, 40 years old and didn't want this one terrible year of his life where he was really not thinking straight to ruin the family. And the wife's leeway to, you know, try to, we need to talk this out. You can't, like, I can't live through this again. And he's like, I get it now. I needed to learn. And so, you know, getting people to wake up, you know, I founded a nonprofit. It's called Consideration because you will be treated with consideration and you will receive consideration for paying for your case in court against Child Protective Services.
Right.
We're looking for an attorney who's willing to stand up for the family court side, which they're very hard to find and they're very discouraged people and they don't last very long.
Do you see a lot of problems with if somebody wants to get an attorney, that they're having a hard time getting an attorney to even represent them? I know that in the probate cases, you can't find an attorney that will go up against these guardians at all. Do you find issues?
No. I was unable to find an attorney in my federal lawsuit that I filed against the Jefferson County Sheriff. And then when I went to the psych ward, they took me. So if you are detained by a cop and he doesn't want to he wants to call you crazy. He doesn't have to read you the Miranda rights. So you are detained. It's almost like a non-constitutional court. So what I'm saying is the administrative courts of probate court and juvenile court, administrative law, if you are not read your Miranda rights, they can say it's because they thought you were too crazy to understand them.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess you're absolutely right. We could just start doing seminars in the nonprofit to have people come, and we could just do lessons on how to know happening in your case that's not right, what's not constitutional,
right.
And to just help people understand what they can do and can't do. But if we don't have a bank of attorneys, we cannot give out legal advice.
Right.
But we can tell people the pitfalls to watch out for. And the number one
exactly.
pitfall is to stop fighting.
Exactly.
That's the number one pitfall. Stop fighting with your own family members. Stop fighting with your spouse, with your brothers and sisters. Just stop the fighting. If you have somebody that's really hard to deal with, try to outnumber them. You know, if you have a brother that wants to screw everybody in the family over and get more than his fair share, then you got to figure out how to present a united front. You know, if you got somebody like that in the family, it's really hard to know, because they'll go get an aggressive attorney, and the rest of you are like you're constantly on the defense.
That's what happened to my family. That's exactly what happened to my family. We were constantly on the defense. Why? He also took my mom too for 3.5 years from us.
Right.
So yeah, we were, and no matter where we turned to, they just played along with it to keep
yep.
the trust money being poured out to these attorneys. It was one of the worst things I have ever seen.
Did he profit from it? Did it work for him?
It worked for him to a way where he had my mom, he had her bank account. And she was able to give him whatever she wanted because she wasn't ruled incapacitated. She wasn't ruled incapacitated even when she went into court and I filed for guardianship for her. They still ruled her incapacitated even though she had clear evidence she had dementia. But they ruled she had no dementia, needed help with her finances. They didn't feel it was right for her daughters to take care of that. They had to appoint a guardian ad litem, a court-appointed attorney, and a limited guardian to take care of her for 3 years, even though she had no incapacity.
Once you're designated incapacitated, there's no turning back?
Well, once you're incapacitated, you can become incapacitated. Because it could be temporary or it could be permanent. My mom was definitely incapacitated to a certain degree, but who knows what would have happened if they made her incapacitated. They probably would have put somebody in there that was a full guardian that would have really taken her away from us. So maybe it was a good thing she only had a limited guardian. But they still didn't put me in charge for over 3 years. In fact, the attorney went up against me and said that I was an incredible threat to my own mother, which is one of their tactics they use, you know, discrimination.
Absolutely.
Against
that's
the family,
what I'm saying. They
character assassination.
They
I had
just
all
take
that.
Over. Yeah, the
I had
the attorney.
Everything. I have everything in my case. In fact, I was a guardian to my husband. I was a guardian to my mother, and I was a trustee to my daughter too. So I understand how all those roles play, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did by not keeping me on top of there was the real problem, because I was not charging my mom nothing. That money was not coming out of the trust of what has been there for her needs, instead of me finding her 3 years later with a couple pairs of shoes and socks, and that was it. She had a pair of socks and some shoes, maybe a couple outfits. That was it. She didn't have dentures.
Yep.
That she had nothing. It was horrible. What I saw.
Well,
you know, and then when
I
you
mean,
went to the pay people to have control of their money. Oh, we can't pay for their everyday needs. It's like, what? What do you mean this is their money? Nope, sorry, I'm not paying for that. I mean, I'm still in shock over what happened, but I've heard that through so many families on our radio show over and over and over again, that these guardians are not doing their job for the best interest of the ward, for the child, for the young adult. It doesn't matter. They're not doing their job. Do you agree with that?
And that's what Lisa Mitchell used to say about her son. He didn't have clothes that fit. He was growing so fast. He never had shoes that were comfortable for him. He had like a size 12 foot by the time he was done growing, but they were never, they're getting like the $8,000 extra a year. They get $192,000 from the Title IV E funding. Then they're getting another $8,000 for the SSI. And it's more than that now because they take the whole thing. And they have to lie about the representative payee. They become, the Department of Human Services becomes the representative payee. And what they're doing is against statutory intent. Daniel Hatcher makes it very clear that this is not what they're supposed to be doing with the money. They're not supposed to be using the money to give to companies that are looking for ways to get more and more children. They literally are using algorithms and data analytics to find the children. Think about that for a second. It's not what the parents do. They were already targeting the kids. And what I started off this conversation with you is that we have two groups of people in America, the groups that know that they're targeted. If you've ever been in foster care, we know from the Memorandum of Procedures that your children can be taken from you in the before any probable cause is determined.
Right.
So we're going after them.
Mm-hmm. So what preventative measures could everybody be doing besides family quit fighting, which in my case, it was almost impossible for one of my family members to quit harassing family. What other preventable measures could you do?
You saying it was impossible for somebody in your family to quit harassing?
Yes. It was, He was the instigator. He was the troublemaker.
Okay. So at that point, did you guys have an attorney that you could trust?
Oh my gosh, we went through 17 attorneys.
And could you trust any of them?
No, obviously not, because each one of them profited from the family, each one of them, and did nothing. Nothing. You know, my mom was actually doing her own trust, which was stupid. She owned it to begin with.
Oh my God.
You know?
So basically, I mean, I think that attorneys need to be able to say, I will deliver this, this, and this. And of course they say, oh, I can't, I have no control over what's going to happen. You know, so then the hell with you, I want results. But, I mean, and you guys, did you end up representing yourself?
We ended up representing ourselves, and it was really tough because we also had, believe it or not, when we couldn't get our attorney there, this lady with the blonde hair, she was, I wish my sister would call me. She was I can't remember what it was, but she was way high up there. I can't remember. My mind is just so off track. But she came in to represent us one time. She was the attorney general, by the way. All that. She was the attorney. Came in to represent us and fill in for that. And she only said three words to the judge, and the judge fell to the floor and said, okay, we'll give you what you want. But we still were in trouble for something we never did. I mean, everything that was told to us, we never did any of that in my family. It was all character assassination. It didn't matter. We were doomed from the time we went into the court. My thing is, stay the fuck out of court. I hate to say use my French, but if you can, stay out of them. I mean, what I've learned now, Oh, my God.
Well, one of the things I've entertained is the thought of actually committing a crime so you get a trial. So you get to tell somebody
yeah.
what happened. I'm not
exactly.
kidding you. I'm
we
not
couldn't
kidding
tell.
You.
Nobody
I know a woman.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked last week about how we met with I have the banner that says Family Court and CPS Kidnapped Children. And you guys have banners, and we were out there holding the banners. We hold the banners underneath the Liberty and Justice for All inscription over the state Supreme Court. 217.
We did that for a long time, didn't we?
Yeah. In 2014, that building's now worth $1.8 billion. I mean, that's what.
Uh-huh.
So they're building Babylon. That's what I say. They're building in Colorado. The Taj Mahal is what we call the Jefferson County Courthouse. It's like they're building these courthouses because the state will survive after we do. And I also talked last week about the inscription, the annotation on the children's code that said that the best interests of the child are the best interests of the state.
Oh, my gosh,
so
that's a good thing. And you know what? Yeah, the best interest of the elderly is the best interest of the state. I agree with that, too. And you know that in Denver, they are selling that Denver Post building, the newspaper, to the courts. Did you know that? That whole thing is going to be courts now.
Oh, well, that's funny because remember you were there with Anna when I stood on the front of the steps of the state capitol and said, see, over here we've got court, here we have the Supreme Court. Here we have the Denver Post, which is basically bought by the courts, and now they're taking that building over. They're getting
yes,
well,
they are. Yeah, it was just announced the other day.
So the courts are growing, folks. If anyone's listening, mm-hmm. So Luann, do we have any callers?
I'm going to say that right now. If you want to call into the show, the phone number to do that is 845-241-9962. You press a 1. 845-241-9962, you press a 1. And I know a lot of families that, you know, they have. I was listening to this one lady the other day on Facebook, and she goes, I'm living in Georgia, and I got a knock at the door, and it was Department of Social Services saying that I was not taking care of my children right. And she goes, they walked in my house and demanded that I show them each room of the kids and all that, of where they were sleeping and all that, and she could not believe it. And they said, we're keeping an eye on you. And this lady was freaked out that they were allowed to do that. Do you see that often?
And they're not allowed to do it, and she should have said, I will bring each child to the door and show you my children are fine. Unless you have a court order, you cannot come in. And I'm calling my attorney right now. Whether I have one or not, you say you're calling an attorney right now and you start looking for an attorney that will be on the phone or something, and they cannot come in. They cannot come in without a court order or a search warrant.
Right. Well.
And they come barging, they try to barge in anyway, so you don't even, you shut, as soon as you see that they're there, you shut the door right away and lock it, and you go to a window.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk to them through the window, and you can show them the children are okay, and how many children you have, and what their names are, and that's it.
And you know what? Have you ever noticed that when a sheriff or somebody knocks on your door, they hit it hard, boy. And I tell you what, I remember the restraining orders coming to my family one after another, and every time I'd hear the door go bam, 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 I'm like, oh, I already know it's the police giving me something else. It was terrible. It's really frightening to go through all that. It really is. I mean,
well,
I'm writing this
traumatic,
and I'm just, God, all this stuff my family went through.
You got your mother back when the money was gone?
No, actually, we got my mom back when most of the money was gone. I mean, the way the property was sold was for like 10 cents on the dollar. I mean, property we would have been worth over $5 million today. Nobody would be in poverty. I wouldn't be struggling my ass off. I mean, it's so saddened to see the homes that we lived in. Across the street, there's mansions. The home that we lived in is a mansion. I mean, it's what it's the whole thing. I can't, and not only that, but one of the properties that we had is now a fire station, a huge fire station. So at least I know it's doing good for somebody. But all that was taken for us for, like, all of that property, four properties, $200,000 they sold it for, everything. And so when my – I didn't talk to the public administrator for, like, I'm saying 8 years of that time at all. So when my mom passed away, there was just, like, about $60,000 or $80,000 left, and she divided among herself and kids, and that was into that. But it was saddened to see – that we were not allowed to sell it ourselves. We were not allowed to rent it out. We kicked out our renters. Yeah, we had a huge amount of 123 empty cars gone. They were forced off the property. I mean, the whole thing totally makes me sick to this day. I talk about it in a book that I'm writing. But nobody should have to go through the humility of what we went through. Nobody. Hillary, you still there?
Who?
Hillary.
I'm here. Yeah, I'm here.
So,
I agree with everything that was said, that, you know, we're really behind the eight ball, that we have to try harder because the court systems are corrupt.
Yeah. That's sad. It's sad to say that, you know.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely. And it's bigger than we ever imagined.
Mm-hmm. I have to agree with you there.
So huge. We're just little peons. And I don't know, you know, I mean, I struggle with this. Is this good for my health?
Yeah.
Is it good for my health to be, you know, I'm still working.
Mm-hmm.
I run to court for people. I'm driving to Nebraska with my buddy. So, you know, we're doing everything we know how, and that's the only way. You know, at some point, I mean, I don't have a partner in my life. You know, it's like there's not a guy around that wants to put up with somebody that's gonna get a phone call at 2 a.m. and say, you know, they're not. They're banging on my door, and you know, my husband's drunk again, and it's just like,
something. But you know something, honestly, and I will divulge. I am an open book. There are men, people who will back us up. I started dating someone, and he is 100,000,000% behind me. He's like, you've got to keep doing what you're doing. No comprehension about guardianship, you know, family court, this, that, and the other. Only what I've told him, and he is 100% behind me. So there are people out there, even though they haven't been affected, who get it.
I agree with that. And it's like, it's kind of like family, you know, they hear me all the time. Everybody I know hears me all the time, and it's something that I just can't stop talking about. You know, once it happens to your family, it's devastating. It never goes away. You know, the pain never goes away of what they did to my family. And then all of a sudden your mom passes away, and the pain's still there, and it just doesn't go away. And not only that, the family hostility is still there as well about everything. That never goes away as well. So we're,
you know, something, Luann, it'll never go away.
Because there's static on the phone going on, so who's, you know, you're going to have to mute your phone or not speaking. Okay, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Hillary.
Doing broccoli.
Thank you. The family dysfunction will never go away. I mean, mm-hmm. even, what is it, 2017, 5 years later, and it's still there. But I'm one of the lucky ones, and so is my dad. He got out of guardianship, which is a miracle.
Mm-hmm. That is amazing. That's amazing. You know, I mean, because they want the whole. So part of me is like, I don't want them to win. I don't want them to win against me. I don't want to be damaged by them.
Exactly how I feel about everything. it's not only with the courts, it's also with our food industry, you know. And I'm like, I'm not eating none of that junk. That bioengineered shit ain't going to happen. And the same way, I don't want them to win. I don't. That's why I do what I do, you know. I can't stand the injustice going on with everybody.
Right, right.
It's just not right.
No. And I mean, to get out of a guardianship is amazing. That's what you hope for. We were able to let my friend's son become her mother, become his mother, become her guardian when we got him out of state care. And we had one good judge that looked at the situation. And you know what happened was, this young man was 21 years old, and he had been moved from Pueblo to Colorado Springs to another place in Colorado Springs, the youth center, and then they moved him up to Golden to Lookout Mountain. And the judge asked him what town he lived, what city he lived in. He goes, he gave the wrong name. He didn't know where he was living because he didn't know what boundaries were where, you know, he literally did not know the name of the city he was living in. Because he wasn't living in the city, he was living in the jail. And he'd been in jail since he was 10. In one form or another, in the residential treatment, was a jail for him. And all they did was egg him on and get him in trouble. And then he was put in this place, this detainment, this detention. Then he had to serve some time. And he was never guilty. He's not a guilty person. He's not even capable of being bad. He's just used by the system. And this is what they're doing. And so, you know, I guess, as I said, I wonder, is this good for my health? Is this good for my well-being? Am I taking care of myself? Am I surrounding myself with growing relationships and with healthy relationships?
And if I could just respectfully interject, the answer is no. But is it the right cause to fight for? Absolutely, 1,000,000%. Because if we don't fight for it, no one else will.
So do you think we're making progress then?
Are you kidding me? Of course we are. I mean, in 2017, when I was served with the papers for guardianship of my dad, everyone looked at me like I was an idiot. No one had heard of guardianship. But now, I mean, you just think a month ago, if not less, we had a front page story with the Washington Post. The only thing that was higher on the totem pole was the story about Israel and Gaza. So,
tell me about it.
I'm sorry?
Oh, yeah. Did you ever send me one of those articles?
I did. Yeah, I did. It was a story. It was an article on Doug Hulse, who was put in a guardianship in Seminole County, Florida, and no one contacted his relatives. And the guardian sold his house for less than market value and to this day was never held accountable. But to have a front page article on guardianship with the Washington Post is huge. Will it stop the fight? Absolutely not. But it does give us a kick in the ass to say that people are listening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it was huge. Yeah, I was huge. And we've had a lot of articles come out lately. We just need to figure out how in the hell to turn this thing around. I don't know if we'll see it in our lifetime, but we're certainly all going to work on it till it does. You know,
well,
and that's...
I hope that we can find some kind of a leader who will take on the corruption and take on the deep state, because the deep state is what's running it all. There, we've got an administrative state that is so well connected. They're so organized. They're like an army of people with computers.
mm-hmm. is what they are. And they can, they're, what I said about the ALEC and the template for the laws, they are in our legislators, they are in our courts, they are in our nonprofits, they are in businesses all around this world, it's global. But can we take it down? The only way we can take it down is for people to understand what's happening to them and to start speaking out and stop complying with them. So when they come knocking
right.
on your door, you don't, if it's a really loud knock, like Luann says, you yell out the door, we're in here and we're safe. We didn't call the police. And so who called the police? And they won't even tell you who sent them. They don't, most of the time you need to realize if you videotape those cops, they are not there legally. They did not get an order. They are working for some cash under the table. That's one thing you need to realize, that if there's not a court order, those cops don't belong there. Sent out as, like, buddies to these caseworkers, buddies to these dirty cops. They're all there. So if they don't have the paperwork, they are not supposed to be there. And then what happens is that their bosses will cover for them, and they will get the court order retroactively, or they'll. So one of the things that happened to me was I was on the phone with a mom when the cops were knocking at the door, and they were calling her ex-husband by his first name.
Yeah.
And I said, "You tell that cop, you put me on speakerphone." And I said, "Why are you calling Bobby by his first name? Are you here without authorization helping him?" And the cop left.
Right. So that's good information to give, you know. That's good information to give. You know, and another thing you can do is you have to do preventative maintenance as well. You have to, like, say that you have a family that has a dirty outside of their home. They need to clean that up. Anything that doesn't draw attention to people. You have to go in buddy system to a hospital as well, in case they have hospitalists there as well.
And
I mean, we talk about a lot of preventative. Stay out of court.
At the end, I want to mention, so Kevin Lundberg, a former senator, Colorado,
uh-huh.
worked with a family that had their daughter.
You're fading in and out.
There's Kevin Lundberg. From Colorado has put together a movie called Art Club, and it's about how the 11-year-old girl went to one sponsored art club meeting at school because her school district has hired a person whose job it is to go out and find children who are struggling with their sexual identity and to give them options. And for
mm-hmm.
a year and a half, this girl was fighting her parents. She never went to another meeting. One 3-hour meeting with Art Club. She was fighting her parents and challenging her parents and getting online and getting support from people who were telling her that she really wanted to be a boy. And she believed them. Kevin Lundberg put this movie together. So I'm just saying CPS, in two states, I know Washington State's one of them, they can take your child away from your home, not send them home from school, and not tell you where they are, and house them and shelter them for up to 72 hours and get them all the help they need to go to sign on for transgender drugs and to begin the process of transgendering. I have nothing against people who are gender confused. Nothing. I love everybody. But an 11-year-old who's been through, like, COVID isolation is vulnerable to being brainwashed, and that's exactly what they were doing in this case. And the CPS sides with people who want to transgender children for profit.
Oh, very
on.
Profitable. Everything's very profitable, you know. Every thing that we put up with is, if it's not profitable, it's not going to happen.
Right.
You know, so that's,
so I just wanted
that's,
to get that plug out there. I don't know. Apparently nobody wanted to talk.
Yeah, I know. Apparently everybody's probably shopping or whatever they're doing. you know, and that's like we're coming into the holidays, you know, so I'm thinking of maybe taking off the next 3 weeks. I'm not sure yet. I'm going to talk to my co-host to see what they want to do for the holidays and when we're going to take off and we're going to come back. But we always take off at least the last 2 weeks, probably the last 3 weeks of December, because I'll get pretty burnt out and there's so much festivities to do. So I'll let everybody know next week if we'll be here. And if not, we'll definitely see everybody next year. I'm not sure yet. I will post it if we have another show coming up next week. We will see. But remember, you can find all of our shows at Hidden Truth Revealed on Blog Talk Radio, Faces Radio, we call ourselves. And remember, all our shows are recorded. They're archived. We've had them for 7 years now. We've had over 350 shows. I know I had to take down probably 25 of those shows because threats, you know, attorney threats, this threat, that threat, you know. So
you had to take down
we
shows?
Do have those, huh? Yes.
Why did you have to take down shows?
Well, because I would get a call from somebody saying, oh, the Guardian saw I had a show. Can you take it down? They're trying to use it against me or something like that.
Oh,
so
I
do whatever the people I, you know, whatever they need to do. So if anybody does come on our show and something like that happens, you can always get a hold of us at faceusradio@hotmail.com, F-A-C-E-U-S radio at hotmail.com. And if you even want to start a Blog Talk Radio show next year, get in touch with me. You can use my channel, Hidden Truth Revealed. If you have CPS issues or court issues or probate or family or whatever you want to do and you want to become a host, let me know. We'd be glad to do that. But I give my big thanks to Taylor H. She's been with us 5 years. I was looking up the original record, 5 years. And I think Marcy's been about 6 or 9 months before that. But we've been on air for 7 years. So good.
Wow.
Congratulations.
Congratulations, for sure.
Yeah, it's been a lot of process, but I also feel that I've grown a lot. And I get a lot of my frustrations out on this show. Yes, it's a lot of sad things going on, but it's also wonderful when you can help a family get back their loved one or get back their income or whatever they lose from the courts. It's wonderful to do that. And that's what we do here at Radio. So we listen to your story and give you the wisdom and the knowledge and the education to move forward, you know. There's a lot
right.
of things we can't do, and we give advice. We're not attorneys. We're none of that. You know, it's just everyday
right.
experience.
But you know something, Luann?
Yeah.
We're pretty good. We do our best, and we're out for nothing but one thing, to help people who have gone through or going through exactly what we have gone through, and to help them when no one else is there.
Yeah, you know,
and don't
I would have gotten anything if this would have been there when I was going through it, because I had nowhere to turn, nowhere. I had
nowhere
to
go. You're free. You don't cost them a dime.
No, I don't cost nobody nothing.
No, that's what I tell. That's what I tell people. I've been accused of. So there's a cultural difference between me and some of the clients that I've worked with, and I don't get paid for it. But I call them clients because they're friends of mine now. But, you know, when you work in the foster care system, you reach across racial divides. And I've been accused of, you know, being very master-like and demanding that my people, like, tell the truth to me or stop spending the money that was intended to help them pay for their police records on clothes that they don't need because they already don't have room for the clothes they have in their storage unit that I'm helping them pay for, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I say, how can you think that I'm exploiting you? I'm the one paying for everything.
Yeah, and the thing is that even if we put a book out there and it sells a couple hundred copies, I literally have over $3,500 invested just on my weekly paying rate, a monthly paying radio shows. And it's like, I've been doing all this with no income. You know, it's like, but I feel that it's a time that you give back and you'll get back in reward for it, which I have sometimes.
Hey, if you want to,
you know,
if you want to be affiliated with my nonprofit, we'll get you some money.
Oh, that'd be great.
All right, we'll figure it out. Like, we got to figure out how to use their system so that we can thrive and prosper. And on
exactly.
that note, I'm going to say goodnight. Hillary, you're awesome. I'm so
right.
glad of your success.
Yeah, we're going to go ahead and do that as well. And like I say, we'll know more if we're going to return next week. I'm not sure. If not, we're going to be off till the first of the year. And I'll let everybody know on Facebook and on email and everything if we will be back next week. I'm not sure yet. But anyway, if not, everybody have a good holiday. Hillary, thank you. Marcy, Robin, everybody, thank you for coming on. Hopefully next year we can really bang out some really good shows. And we'll keep these going for as long as we can. Until then.
Thank you very much for the work you're doing.
Very much. You too, Debbie. I can't wait to see what you got for the book. Anyway, good night, Hillary. We'll talk to you all soon later. Here is our thing that we did. I think you were there. I'm not sure. We were in front of, I just love this, the Judicial Integrity Project.
I was there.
Well, yeah, yep. You don't know your judge. Do you remember
yep.
this, Debbie? Here we go.
Yep.
We demand transparency.
We demand transparency.
And accountability.
And accountability.
In every judge from sea to sea.
In every judge from sea to sea.
We just want integrity.
We just want integrity.
Judicial hides a lot from you.
Judicial hides a lot from you.
There's not much in public view.
There's not much in public view.
From this darkness they won't budge.
From this darkness they won't budge.
That's why you don't know your judge.
That's why you don't know your judge.
From this darkness they won't budge.
From this darkness they won't budge.
That's why you don't know your judge.
That's why you don't know your judge.